smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Good morning, campers! Pick up your coffee cup, make a cup of tea, pour yourself a beer. Hair of the dog, it's the Francine Marie Show!
Good morning, thanks for joining us. Okay, I just need you to go right now to thejazzarts.org. Thejazzarts.org. Jazz Arts Charlotte has an opportunity for your child to attend a 12-week session held on Thursday nights, starting February 24th to May 26th. We're going to tell you where to go and all that good stuff, but first they have to audition. Guess who we scored for this interview? It is the amazing, the world-renowned Afro-Cuban drumming and Latin music specialist, playing and teaching Latin jazz for over 35 years. The man had a radio career for 40 years. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Johnny Conga. You know you're the man, right? You know you're the man. Good morning. So Jazz Art Charlotte announced that they had a free Latin jazz ensemble and you were going to be a part of it, teaching the lessons. It's free.
Lonnie, the COO of Jazz Arts, and I have been collaborating about this for the past 3 years since I moved here 3 years ago. I saw that there was a certain lack of music here that I felt I could incorporate here in Charlotte, do something with it and teach the young and bring the community together in a different way, musically, rhythmically. It's not part of the culture here in North Carolina, but it could be. It can be. All forms of music unite people. This is just another form of music that will be new to this community. Okay, and it's going to be exciting. The kids, whoever gets involved in this, will be in training that will stay with them for the rest of their lives, literally. It's a unique opportunity for them to be able to learn something outside of their individual cultures, you see, because Latin jazz is a hybrid form of music, which includes jazz harmonies and Latin rhythms, so you put them up together. And it's an American art form, see? Latin jazz is an American art form. It was created here. In Cuba, they call it Afro-Cuban jazz, but that's a different style and a different form. We've created our own forms of Latin jazz music in this country since about 1954. Mario Bauzo, who was the music director for Machito's orchestra in the 40s, is credited with writing the first Latin jazz tune called Tanga with Machito's orchestra. And how the history worked back then in New York City was that all the black jazz musicians that were hanging out in the black jazz clubs would go to Palladium to see the Latin bands to learn about rhythm. The Latin musicians would go to the black jazz clubs and play with black jazz orchestras to learn about harmonies. And then they all came together. Even Charlie Parker recorded with Machito's orchestra back in the 50s, which was the coming together, so to speak, of the jazz community and the Latin community in New York City at the time. And it's still here today. Latin jazz is all over the world. And it's still a dancing form of music. You can still dance to Latin jazz. And that's another thing I want to bring back. I want to bring back the dancing, you know? When was the last time anybody held a woman in their arms and danced with them? I mean, it's been forever, or vice versa, you know? Has kind of been a little dream of mine. I've been a band leader for many, many years, and I've had many types of bands and everything, and I've done it all. I'm happy to be able to bring this to the Charlotte community, of course, with help. Can't do it alone, you know. So I will have the help of Jazz Arts and other teaching artists that I'll be working with on this project. I'm excited about it.
We'll definitely mention their names, and shout out to Lonnie Davis, my true love. Right. Lonnie.
Exactly. Lonnie is a powerhouse. she's a powerhouse. It's incredible.
She's that little tornado.
Yes, she is. I mean, she's can't keep up with her.
Her brain doesn't stop, and we like that. Is it true that you have 100,000 tunes in your head?
Yeah, I'll date it back to the 40s. The jazz music I grew up with. I have a declarative memory when it comes to music, where I can hear it a couple of times and it's there. I don't understand how it's there, but it's there, and I can scat solos from any instrument that I hear, be it drums, the piano, the saxophone, the flute. My hearing is incredible. From a lot of engineers have told me that I can hear things that they don't hear and stuff like that. And I'm going to bring all my gifts, as I call them, because I consider them gifts, to the kids. It's not just teaching them how to play. The theory is most important as to who, what, where, when, why, and how of all of it. It's not just, all right, now we're going to play this chart down. No. You're going to learn how to make every note your own first, not just dots on the paper. Anybody can do that. But how do you make it your own? How do you put you into it? Whatever instrument you're playing becomes an extension of who you are, you see? So your spirit, your energy, your love, whatever you have inside you is going to be extracted through your instrument. They need to know that. Right now, they're young. They're just going through the motions. They're learning. Nobody's teaching, giving them this theory, because nobody teaches this type of theory. But I do, you see. It's a different approach in learning. I've taught in many colleges and universities because I developed a program nobody had, and that's how I was hired. And I've had a lot of conversations with teachers about how it's harder to teach in mass than it is to teach singular. I thought about this a lot as a child growing up. When you have 25, 30 kids in a classroom, that's 30 different brains working 30 different ways. And nobody knows how their brain works, first of all. You know it's there, and it does what it does, but you don't know how it works. You really don't know how. There's nothing that teaches us how to use our brains besides memorization to pass a test. That's it. That's the whole thing about school. You pass a test, you move on. Yeah, but that doesn't serve me, okay? I have to have hands-on. I didn't know that as a child. I didn't know I was dyslexic. I'd raise my hand, and I'd get the answer wrong. And I'm like, I'm not stupid. And in those days, we didn't know about ADD. We had kids that were emotionally disturbed. I worked in an alternative school. I saw how kids came to school with black and blues and all kinds of stuff they had to go through. Teaching math is very hard when you're dealing with 30 different brains that react and intake differently. And we're not tested as to what our intake can be, what level of intake we're on. For me, it's progressive thinking in the way we teach the young. We have to show them how to use their brain. And what way to use it, you know, in a way that serves them to get the results that they need. Not everybody has to go to college. There's a lot of great jobs out here you can do that doesn't require a degree, that pay very, very well. Not everybody's made for that type of scenario, but we've been taught, oh, you go to school, you go to college, you get a job. Maybe I don't want to live like that. Maybe I don't see my life that just that way, you know. What I'm bringing to the table is something really different for these kids in the way they're going to learn and approach what they're doing. I'm even planning on having a dance teacher come in and teach the kids how to dance to the music that we'll be playing. See, that doesn't happen. Musicians.
No, it doesn't.
Musicians don't dance, but they do dance. But you just don't see them dance. Because I'm a musician, I'm on the stage. But when I get off the stage, people say, don't you dance? Yeah, I can dance. But would I dance? I'm not a dancer, but I can dance. You know, my mom taught me how to dance, all that type of stuff. But it just makes them stronger internally to be able to understand that the drum goes hand to foot, okay? The minute you play the drum, the feet should start moving, okay? These kids have never played with a drum like mine. That's going to be a whole shock in itself to them because they're used to a drum set and that's it. But we're adding Latin percussion instruments to it. They have no idea about what they do and what their positions are in a Latin jazz orchestra. But they're going to find out. And some of them are going to, like, you know, they're going to react like that because they're not accustomed to the sounds and the feel and the rhythm and the pulse. That's what I'm bringing to the table, to teach these kids about the drum and the pulse and the music and the dance, you see. That's really going to round them all out for their futures.
Do kids have to have at least 1 year of experience with an instrument?
Well, I would think so, yes. I would hope so. I would hope that the kids that are coming are at least adept to some level of playing. I have a thing about that too. You know, I want to see them look me in the eye when they play. I want to put my drum next to them and play one-on-one with them and see how they react and how they respond to it. See, nobody's ever done this stuff.
Do you become one with your instrument, whatever you're playing?
I am one with my instrument for over 60 years. Going on 60 years I've been playing.
Have you ever played Carnegie Hall?
Yes, I did. I played Carnegie Hall with Sergio Mendes in Brazil 77 in 1978. My dream come true.
Did you have anything else on that bucket list?
Yeah, but that's...
You better drop some names. Come on. I know you're a very kind, compassionate. You're not into the labels and the listings and all the titles, but you're Johnny Conga.
Yeah.
World-renowned.
Yes, what they tell me. I've never been the type to be out there, you know, pushing myself or pumping myself out there. And I've never been like that. My first teacher taught me to be humble, be a giver, but I am a giver naturally. The drum has taken me all over this planet. It's fulfilled my dreams beyond what I could have imagined, which I used to imagine a lot. I predicted Carnegie Hall to friends of mine. I predicted it, and 9 years after my prediction, they were there to see the prediction come true. I actually, really, I'm a person of destiny, and I have this thing every once in a while that I'll just say stuff. I've gone to a show with six of my friends in the Carnegie Hall, and this was the show, can't forget it. It was Dick Gregory, this was 1967, 68, Dick Gregory, Bobby Timmons Quartet, Nina Simone, Willie Bobo, and Mongo Santa Maria. Of course, I'm a fan of Mongo and Willie Bobo, which I became friends with years later and actually got to perform with them years later. We all went into Carnegie Hall together and bought our tickets at the box office window. So we all go into Carnegie Hall. Now, my friends are getting seated very quickly in the last two rows in the center of Carnegie Hall, but I can't find my seat. So I go up to the usher. And I said, I can't find my seat. Give my ticket. He says, follow me. There was only one empty seat in the front row, second seat in, and I bought that ticket, and it put me in the front row.
Wow.
And I, friends, they go, look at Johnny. How is it that I wound up with the ticket that puts me in the only seat empty in the whole front center row of Carnegie Hall, and I get that ticket? Long story short, as we're walking out, I said, man, you guys are going to see me play here one day. I just blurted that out. 9 years later, everybody came. The whole hood, my whole projects, everybody, mom, pop, everybody came to see my prediction come true. Yeah, yeah.
Did you grow up in New York? You grew up in New York.
I grew up in the Bronx. I'm from the Bronx. I grew up in the Bronx. And it was schools for percussion. There wasn't too much. I attended Dr. Billy Taylor's Jazzmobile, where I studied with Richie Pablo Landrum with djembe and Charlie Persip for drums. My first teacher was Hank Fields, who came into my life out of nowhere because he had moved into the projects where I lived. And I was the only conga player in the whole projects. And one day I walked by the building and I heard these drums and I said, oh man, who is that? And I eventually met Hank and he became my mentor and teacher. I love that man. Yeah. And then I met a guy named George Caldwell III. And I met him in a ballet class, which was strange because I had a girlfriend, Rhonda, who was taking ballet. And she said, Johnny, man, you got to come down and meet Sabu. That was his nickname. And I said, he plays congas in my ballet class. And I'm like, ballet and congas, congas and ballet. How does that work? You know, I'm like, I never heard of such a thing because I'm on the Latin side of things, you know, music-wise, salsa and stuff like that. So I go down there and to Manhattan, go to this building and get off, I don't know, 12th floor. And as soon as the elevator door opens, I hear the drums immediately and the doors open and I see the girls in their black leotards dancing across the floor. And I walked in and there was this man sitting there with what we called a diddy bop hat, a tie, jacket, sweater, and three conga drums. And he was playing for them. And I just couldn't understand how that worked. He was from Harlem. He had played with Parker. He was in Dizzy Gillespie's orchestra. He toured with Catherine Dunham's Drummers and Dancers. He played with Ala Tunji's Drummers and Dancers. He was an incredible musician. He played acoustic jazz guitar, Caribbean music. He made his own metal flutes. George was an incredible musician. He made me a dance musician. I'm first and foremost a dance musician. People don't use that term today, but that's what I am, because I played for dancers. I played for the New York City Ballet. I was a principal percussionist for the Miami City Ballet for 5 years. I was with Chuck Davis, Afro-American Company, the only minority in the company of 60 people for 7 years in New York. My first gig was the New York World's Fair in 1964 with Alatunji's Drummers and Dancers. So I've been at it a long time, doing a lot of stuff, you know.
If you're just now tuning in and your mouth is like, what? Who is he? Who'd she get? It is the amazing Johnny Conga, world renowned, as you can already tell. Percussionist, drumming is your thing, right?
Afro-Cuban drumming and music is my thing. That's the core of my center, I guess you could say, Afro-Cuban drumming and music. As I like to say, Afro-Cuban Caribbean drumming and music. I have to add the Caribbean in there besides Cuba, though the Cuba is the mainstay of the islands because it's the largest island, and it created its own form of music over time with the African slaves that were brought, and the melding of all the different types of people that they had in Cuba, which they still have. I mean, slavery wasn't just for blacks. They had Chinese slaves in Cuba. They had white slaves, Irish slaves in Cuba. They were slaves. The Chinese are still in Cuba today. They have a little Chinatown. Oh, yeah, in Havana. They speak Spanish, of course, and they speak Chinese, you know, Chinese Cubans. It's an incredible country in itself if you get into the history of it and you find out that the music is different all over the island. It's like, what? How is that? But you learn over time if you study the island and its music, you'll see how it just created out of memory, of memories of slaves from Africa who had rhythm in their head, and combined with other Africans in Cuba, they were able to meld their rhythms together through their memories, because you can't take a memory away. You might take my body, but you can't take my memory, you see. So when they came to Cuba, though they were, you know, indentured to work and everything like that, when they could, they started on boxes and just hitting boxes, you know, anything they can hit, tables or box. They didn't have no drums. They weren't allowed drums, you know, in Cuba. They weren't allowed to play drums in the streets of Cuba until the 1930s. Slavery in Cuba was the last place 30 years after our slaves were freed in America, the Cuban slaves were freed 30 years later. Yeah. It's a heavy thing. And now you have all this incredible drumming and music because of their memory. You go to Santiago de Cuba, which is on the southern end. You have the influence of Haitian and Jamaican. There they eat red beans and white rice. In Havana, they eat black beans and white rice. So it's a difference there, you see? It's a cultural difference. Yeah, Jamaicans and the Haitians brought the red beans, you know? The Africans were into the black beans, you know. So it culturally, that's how it is in Cuba. It's an incredible place. No, I haven't found two drummers that are alike either. And the drum is the mainstay of the people. The drum keeps everyone together. If they took the drums away, there'd be revolution in a minute. Castro knew he couldn't take the drums away from the Afro-Cubans. He just said, look, you're a commodity now. So put your groups together, start recording, and we'll send you around the world to make money for us. He'll make some money too. And Cuban music is most famous, most popular form of Latin music because they created it. They basically created it from scratch, from European, what they call danzas, coming out of East Europe and Western Europe, from France. French were very influential in Cuba. They brought the violins. They brought the timpanis to Cuba. The little black wooden flute they brought. The timpanis were very, very small, which the Cubans saw and made timbales out of them by cutting them in half and putting them up on a stand. Creative, inventive. They've invented the conga drum there. just by looking at certain things. They're very creative. The Cubans are very creative. I mean, there's no Walgreens, there's no AutoZone in Cuba. They have to rebuild their own parts for cars, and they have to make tires somehow. I mean, it's just, you know, where people have almost nothing, their survival.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the source, it's the heart of the drum. The first place out of Africa, the drum landed in Cuba.
I hear drums are harder to play than any other instrument.
Well, now, with the advent of, I have to say, Giovanni Hidalgo from 1983 and a Cuban conga player named Daniel Ponce. He was the first person I saw play five congas at once. I said, whoa. And ever since then, everybody's playing four and five congas. So the drum has advanced to a very, very high technical degree now. It's not just boombity boombity. It's rudimentary approaches. I have books written on drumming, just one drum. This is one drum, rumba quinto, it says, right? The quinto is one drum. This whole book is dedicated to that one drum and how you play it in Cuba. This is from Cuban Intellect, written by my good friend David Peñalosa, who's an academic, and he's been to Cuba. He's an initiate in the religion of Lucumí in Cuba. He plays, he teaches, he got his own youth orchestra out of the Bay Area. Here's another book he wrote about clave, these two sticks. These two sticks are the formation of Cuban music. It doesn't exist without these two sticks. Cuban music does not exist without these two sticks called clave.
And they're a little thicker than a drum, like a drumstick.
This is, okay, on the slave ships. You know, on those old 1800 ships, they had those round little things with the handle down that they used to stick in. And sometimes they, in the movies, you see them pull them out in those pirate movies and hit somebody over the head with. Well, those were the first type of things that they used on board the ship when they would have the slaves come up to exercise on the ship. And the sticks would mark out tempo for them to walk around the ship. Now, even the dance, the conga, you know, the conga dance, where you put your hand on the people, that's a slave dance. The slave is told them, put your hands on the slave in front of you, on his shoulders. Now we're going to take off the chains on one leg. So you're going to take three steps and kick out the free leg. One, two, three, kick. One, two, three, kick. So that was their exercise, and somebody would beat out a tempo for them to walk around the ship, and that was their form of exercise. That was their way, and that eventually became the conga. Commercially, you know, over time, it was just incredible how all these things are so related. So the history behind even just doing something like that. There was no bands yet in Cuba. The first bands they had were Mexican bands that they brought over from Mexico for the political things that they were doing, and, you know, to have the Mexican. And that's when they saw the brass. The Africans saw, oh, trumpets. You know, they saw the horns and stuff like that. The Mexicans brought to Havana. That was their first exposure, because they had first been exposed to the European danza music, which is what I call Cuban waltz music. My mom taught me how to do that dance. It's an actual Cuban way of doing the waltz to this music, which is, you know, violin, cello, bass, you know, orchestrated, no conga. The conga wasn't introduced 2 years later until 1945 through a blind Cuban musician who became famous, named Arsenio Rodriguez. He was the first man to add a conga drum to a band in Cuba, because he's African. He spoke African. You know, he was only one generation removed from slavery in 1945. The slaves had just been freed 1898 in Cuba. So he's like first generation, you know, freed African in Cuba. His grandfather was a slave. Mongo Santamaria's grandfather was a slave. And he told me that story. So they have that. And then the Africans that came were from Nigeria, the Yoruba, because they were trying different slaves in cutting cane. And some of them just couldn't cut cane for 12 hours. So they needed bigger, stronger slaves. And then they got into Nigeria and started kidnapping whatever Nigerian slaves, because they were just bigger and stronger. And that's the main category of people in Cuba today. The Yoruba, they recreated the religion of Lucumí from Nigeria into Cuba over time. You know, people don't understand that these slaves had lives. They were educated in their ways that we couldn't understand because it's their ways. You know, Africa has 54 countries in it. 54 countries on one continent. As, you know, if you think about it, which I had never thought about for years, I never thought about it. Africa was one country, but it's 54 countries. So you have, oh, now you have to understand, 1,000 slaves in the ship doesn't mean they can all talk to each other either. If I'm from the Sudan area and this one's from Ghana, what makes you think we can talk to each other? Yeah, we're from the same continent. I'm from another country in that continent, you know? It's like somebody going from the Bronx to L.A. and they don't understand me and I don't understand because we just talk differently and we have slang and all that type of stuff, you know?
First of all, it's an honor to interview you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Lonnie, thank you for being available today. Sure. If parents are listening now, and we just want people to know that Jazz Arts Charlotte is a nonprofit 501c3 organization dedicated to the promotion of education and music and the preservation of jazz related to art forms. So when parents go online to register their child just to audition, they're going to go to the jazzarts.org/education. You got to do that because auditions are on February the 10th through the 17th, right?
Yes. It starts at 6 o'clock. It'll be Thursday evenings, or workshop as we're calling it right now. It will be every Thursday night from 6 to 8, 6 to 8:30, depending. We don't want to keep the kids out too late on a school night, but that'll be the time that we'll be involved with them. And it'll be at VAMP.
Yeah, it's VAPA Center, located at 700 North Tryon Street. And the classes that you're teaching, well, we'll call it workshops for the Jazz Art Charlotte Latin Jazz Ensemble. Yes. It's happening February 24th through May 26th. So it's 12 weeks of education. It's 12 weeks of history. It's 12 weeks of leadership. It's 12 weeks of learning from you. Who else is on the billboard? Who else is on the ticket?
Julio Jerry, he's an educator and a trumpeter. He's out of Winston-Salem right now, but he'll be working along with me in getting this workshop together. And he's a great musician, artist in his own right. And I look forward to working alongside him as well.
Okay, you mentioned a woman who could dance. Who is that?
Jennifer from Rumbao. Rumbao is her dance company, R-U-M-B-A-O. She has a dance company here in Charlotte, and she teaches how to dance salsa, bachata, and other forms of dance. She's very good. She's from Venezuela. She's been here for some time, and she's got a great school, a dancing school. I'm bringing the dancing community with the music. I'm trying to bring it all together. It's something very unique and different, you know? For North Carolina, for sure.
And it being free, parents.
Yes, it's free. All you have to do is show up, bring the kids. This is an opportunity for them that they wouldn't have otherwise to do what we're doing. It costs a lot of money anywhere else, for one thing. These kids really have no idea what's in store for them. It will be very somewhat intense for them. It's not going to be like a regular classroom, you know, with a teacher and you raise your hand. It's not going to be, it's hands-on. You're going to be working. You have to articulate. You're going to be tested in ways you've never been tested before. And it's only going to make them better and stronger musicians and more wiser. The theory for me is the core of it and how they develop as individual musicians themselves. So they take that with them into their future. Like, I'm going to tell them, look, I'm from the past, now in your future. And what I have here, I'm giving you for you to take into your future. And the kids may not understand what that actually means until I start working with them and teach them my way, how I learned, what was brought to me, what challenged me. My first band, I was 16 in my first professional Latin jazz band in New York City. I was 16 years old when I turned professional. I had my union card and the whole nine yards at 16 from local 802 in New York. And my first band leader was Phil Diaz, a vibe player, Puerto Rican man. He was 35. Everybody in the band was in their 30s or 40s. Some of them were very, Llewellyn Matthews was the piano player who went on to become the musical director for Nancy Wilson. Pat Patrick went on to play with many, many people, and his son became the mayor of Boston over time. Pat was the one who taught me about the union and how to go to Roseland on Thursdays for the music call for jobs and stuff like that. Pat was very instrumental. But Phil was the one who started to lay down the theory early about what my job was as a conga player in a Latin jazz band. And that was basically, which he always told me, he said, Johnny, you play time until it's time. Okay, I play time until it's time. What does that mean? He said, well, until it's time may mean you get time on your instrument. Oh, you mean I get to solo? He goes, no, you play time until it's time. He said, because you're playing for dancers. It's not about you. It's about the people on the floor in front of you. And you have to play hard and strong because they're dancing off the pulse of your drum. You see, like I said, the drum goes hand to foot. The minute I start playing the drum, I see feet moving because I'm doing it right. You see, I've learned how to do it right. I've learned how to make people move with my drum. See, and that's the object. The object, yeah. Music is to make people move and respond and react.
Right? So if we don't have rhythm, could you...
It'd be cold. It would be cold. It'd be kind of almost indifferent without rhythm. I mean, there's all kinds of forms of music that have no rhythm, of course. I remember there used to be a term called avant-garde jazz from the 60s. Coltrane played it. Others played it, you know, but they don't use that term today. It's a lost term, musical term, avant-garde jazz, you know. You don't hear it at all. Where'd it go? Why did it go? Why didn't it keep evolving? Who knows? You know, the artists change. Everything changes over time. Musicians change. They grow. You know, they get creative. They hear things differently. You know, that's why Miles Davis was able to change jazz 3 different times in his musical career. He literally changed jazz 3 times. He created fusion. He created jazz fusion and funk fusion. Nobody was doing that. Miles was doing it.
Do you think these days... kids, teens, because this is for middle school students, do you think, right, if they learn enough and they absorb enough, they can come up with a new beat, sure, a new form? Okay.
Yes. Of music? I mean it's look at hip-hop, look at rap. I mean, these are all forms of music that came out of communities, invented on the spot, you know, and now it's one of the biggest forms of entertainment and music, whether you like rap or not, or hip-hop, or whether you like that or not. It's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. People thought it would die out after 20 years. No, it just got stronger. New artists come in, they get a little more creative, they have different ideas. You may not agree with them, but that's how music and art is. It can be controversial. Of course it can, you know? And it is. It's still controversial. When the hard rockers out of England came out, like Led Zeppelin and all those kind of groups came out with their new kind of rock, it was like blew people's minds here. When the Beatles, you know, it's just... these guys are doing 3-minute tunes. That's all the tunes were, 3 minutes long, and affects thousands of people. How does a 3-minute tune affect people like they did? That to me was a phenomena, because I grew up on the Beatles. So it was like, wow, you know, everybody was into the music. It was like, where did these guys come from? And I mean, they're not doing anything really special, but it's the sound and the way they play. It's hard to explain. You know, until the point came where creatively they couldn't work together anymore and had to find their own roads in music and went their way, you see. So, yeah, music will grow. It will change. I'm trying to keep it alive because I've heard, you know, the prophecies of, well, 25 years from now, there won't be anything called a musician. I've heard that. No. Music is a lifeblood of the human being. We need it. It's something that... it came out of us somehow a long time ago, and we've been working it. And that's not just us. It's all over the world, music, in all its forms. So it's not going to go anywhere, really. Where's it going to go? If we get to the point where it becomes stagnant, then we're in trouble. Usually the music is also entertained with dance forms. See, we don't have the dance forms today that we used to have, you know, years ago. I mean, salsa is still... one of the most popular dance forms because people love salsa. They love Latin dancing. Australia, you wouldn't believe it. Salsa. France. I mean, it's just all over the world. Latin jazz, too. Latin jazz is just as popular, you know? So that's the plan, is to create this middle school youth ensemble, teach them what Latin jazz is all about, plus all the other things that go with the theory, maturing, and a lot of things. It's going to be very interesting how they respond.
It's going to be big. It's going to be huge. Okay, so I did have to mention that you were on WDNA. I know we've got two more minutes. Right. WDNA as a talk show host or disc jockey? They used to call them the disc jockeys, right?
Yeah, we used to call them DJs and stuff like that, or radio host. You turn it into a radio host. You know, I was WDNA 88.9 out of Miami, Florida. My show was Fusion Latina. I worked with that station for about 20 years as a radio host. And now I'm doing my own radio show, which is podcast through New York City. Heat FM Radio. But I think they just got signed to a new call letter, a real station now. So it was a breakthrough station, you know, try to break through. And it took a couple of years. And now it's kind of working now and becoming something else over time.
Folks don't know what call letters are. It's like the FCC designates certain call letters for certain regions in the world.
Yeah, right, right.
And even TV stations have call letters. So my last question, my world-renowned artist, musician, when is the book coming out?
Oh, my book. Oh, Rhythm is My Heartbeat. That's the name of it. It'll be this year. Yeah. Rhythm is My Heartbeat. That's the title of it. It's about my musical life. Not my personal life. That's a whole nother book. My personal life is a whole nother book. So I just kept it to my musical life and with artists and, you know, stories on the road type stuff like that, you know. And it's a kind of uplifting for any other musicians to know that you can work through anything, fight through anything. Just don't forget to dream, live the dream, work the dream. It's not just going to come to you. You have to work for it and be prepared when that door opens to walk through it and know that you're ready. Okay?
All right. All right, everybody, right now, if you have a teen who has at least 1 year experience playing an instrument, just go on to thejazzarts.org/education. We've been joined this morning by the world-renowned Johnny Conga. I'm putting my bid in right now. I want to interview you when your book comes out, okay?
Sure, you got it. And I'd also like to add that we're also looking for percussionists. So if any percussionists out there, be a drum set or otherwise, please come for the auditions, okay? Because I need three percussionists at least, okay? We are including congas, bongos, and timbales in the orchestra, which is necessary. So even if you play vibraphone or timpani or snare drum, please audition. Come and audition, okay? I will be teaching these instruments as well for the orchestra, okay? Unless you already know how to play, that's a plus.
Okay.
To play bongos and timbales, that's a plus.
You have to be in middle school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to be in middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to prove that you're in middle school because everybody would want to come and just sit in the audience and watch this magic. All right. We have come to the end of our show. I have adored every second of this interview.
Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. And the support. We needed it.
All right. thejazzarts.org/education, Johnny Conga. Do you have social media?
I'm on Facebook.
Just Johnny Conga is your handle?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, your 1 hour public talk radio is up. We did it this time, didn't we, with Johnny? Maybe join us next weekend, same time, same station. You never know what you're going to hear. I am your hostess and hostess, Francine Marie. Until we meet, and I know we will, you have a good week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for the Francine Marie Show, where we address issues concerning you and your family. That's all for now. See you next week.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.